You know, sir, my impression of your father was he was a very intelligent fellow. He grasped things. When he lacked in formal education, he grasped, he could take the argument on physics or whatever to anybody.
Yes. There's no doubt he had a sharp mind. I think everybody agrees on that. And, you know, but at the same time, he was, they call him black and white, and there's no gray in between, really, you know. He's just that style of personality, and a lot, that's why people loved him, but that's why they hated him, too. So, you know, it's just that style. There's one of those no in between and kind of extreme characters. His father was very much like that as well, and they had the same habits about bumming cigarettes off of people and, you know, eating sweets all the time. And, you know, they both died of the same thing. They, you know, they got leg and bacteria infections mm-hmm. in their legs and couldn't walk and were hospitalized. And same story, you know.
Yeah, we have an interview with him where he talks a little bit about Watergate. But he didn't go into great detail about it. Did he ever talk to you about that, his experience of Watergate and what the connection was?
Yeah, I mean, he talked to me about all that stuff, you know, Watergate and JFK and UFOs and CIA and all his friends. And, you know, he kept me up to date. And, you know, I don't think there's a super huge secret out there. You know, everybody says we want disclosure. I think you've already gotten it. You know, I mean, if we're all talking about it, we already know about it. It's not 1900 anymore, you know, but it's not out. It's a dangerous technology, I think, what these guys are playing with. It's like it's more powerful than nuclear weapons by far. And you know, and that's what they were, you know, tinkering with. Maybe they didn't have it in their hand to play with it, but they had the idea in their mind, you know, and that's the most dangerous thing is the idea itself. You know, it's like the nuclear weapon. It changes history, you know, and also you don't know what we're all here for anyways. You know, we could be here for a vacation and to chill out, and we don't need that stuff. Also, you know, a lot of people say, you know, oil and gas and this and that. But, you know, history progresses, and I see the government as, you know, we're getting better. We got computers and internet and phone, and, yeah, it might not be as fast as everybody want clean energy and things like that, but who knows what's going on. You know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of theories, and that's what they are, theories. So he was very on the edge of UFO technology. I don't think he could have built it due to the financing. It's very, very expensive. You look at an automobile factory. It's very huge, and, you know, and mm-hmm. he wanted to do it on a small budget, and I don't think anybody could take that so serious, but I think a lot of people knew he had the right idea, you know, and that's where him and Jack Sarfatti and Pandolfi and Kit Green and Pal Putoff and all those guys came together is because they all kind of had the same idea, although they had differing points of view on how it worked and things like that, but they all pretty much knew what the same – they're all talking about the same thing, I think.
You know, he knew some pretty famous people. He was connected to John DeLorean and Larry Flint. And, I mean, tell me a little bit about those relationships if you know anything about those.
Sure. We met John DeLorean a lot as kids. He's a business guy. You know, he ran corporations and built a car that was, you know, going to, you know, possibly kick the crap out of everybody else a bit, you know, on its mileage. And, you know, there a lot of people have conspiracies about John DeLorean, but he was in trouble. You know, he got himself in trouble with the wrong people, whether it was good or bad people, you don't know. You know, if he could have been the good guy or they could have been, you don't know. My dad helped him when he was in trouble, definitely helped him when he was in the court cases. And, you know, we had dinner out at John DeLorean's house and met him several times in different places around the country. And, you know, Mike, you know, we knew his wife and kids, you know, a little bit. We met mm-hmm. them. You know, not enough to be real close to them, but they knew us and we knew them and we knew, you know.
Yeah, right. So he worked as a private investigator for them, probably.
Said that John DeLorean was framed, you know, and that he played, you know, they were playing dirty tricks and that dad was one of the dirty trick guys that were for hire, you know, just like a, you know, kind of an agent or whatever. And, you know, he said that he played some dirty tricks back on them and that the right thing happened in the end, you know, and that's what matters a lot of times. And, you know, people lose sight of what they're doing, the means of what they're doing to get to an end. And, you know, if you're going to lose sight of that and you're going to wear you know, law, the color of law, then, you know, you better be ready for other people to do that back to you. So as long as everybody plays by the same rules, that's fine. My dad just didn't believe that a lot of times everybody would follow the rules and play by them. So he would throw out the book sometimes, you know.
Well, right. It takes sometimes, you know, you got to do the same thing that the people are doing to you, you know, unfortunately. Michael Jackson, he was connected to him some way or another. What was that? Was that the same sort of kind of client relationship?
Yeah, Dad became kind of famous during DeLorean and Larry Flint's cases. We had dinner at Larry Flint's house one time with him as well and met him and things. And, you know, his house was quite, you know, a shocker out in L.A. with, you know, women hanging out there and things. And you could, we were kids, but, you know, we seen things in his basement and things like that. And, you know, Dad got a reputation for being able to be a fixer, you know, in tough situations for, you know, kind of like celebrity people. And he, I think he had a reputation from his JFK and Watergate stuff with keeping his mouth shut, you know, and on certain things. You know, he had a big mouth, too. There's no doubt about that. But he kept his mouth shut when it was important, you know, and when things were on the line. And I think he got a reputation.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly did know how to keep a secret, despite the fact that he would talk a lot. I mean, for instance, we still don't know anything about JFK other than the fact that he did pretty well play some dirty tricks on Garrison down in New Orleans. Your dad told me he was working for the White House at that time, and Garrison thought he was working for the CIA.
Sure. I don't think
did he ever say that, say much to you about that early experiences?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing is I grew up around my dad. I knew him for 37 years, and that's one of his big stories. That's kind of where he cut his teeth is that JFK thing. And, you know, you got to just look at the facts of it. And, you know, I don't think it's something that people haven't figured out. A lot of people love conspiracy because it's just continuous questions and, you know, debate. But, mm-hmm. you know, the JFK thing to me is a huge mystery. And, you know, there's a lot of people always ask me, did you ever talk to your dad about JFK or this or that? And, you know, yeah, I did, you know, 4 years ago. You know, he came to Thailand and we sat down. And, you know, I knew he wasn't going to live a long time. He was 69, but he was kicking around quite good. And, you know, he was bumping around Bangkok and smile on his face and, you know, enjoying the Thai people because they're very friendly. And, you know, the food and weather here is good as well. So, you know, he told me those details and things like that, what he knew. I think there was a certain level of protection that he didn't want me to know every exact thing, you know, like you wouldn't tell your son, you know, the details of your sex life or things like that, you know, the specific things, mm-hmm. you know, all this or that. So he did tell me, you know, what happened, and he left me, you know, items on JFK, and he left a lot of files, and I knew his story. I knew him growing up. I knew his body language. I knew when he was, you know, showing off and exaggerating. I knew when he was telling the truth. You know, if you look at the facts, you know, and you want to go through that, you know, I can take you through the facts of that and tell you what I think as, you know, one of the people. I think that he was a very young man, you know, at that time. You have to look at his age to start out when that happened. You know, he wasn't very old. He's in his 20s. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, Gordon knew what was going on, you know, because I think he got his face was placed in the scene and things like that. He was placed, you know, he was young and stupid, and that's why they used him, you know, and used him for that. But he ended up being very successful in that. And, you know, a lot of people have placed him at the scene of the assassination. You know, they think that he's the Umbrella Man. And, you know, there are very, you know, similar resemblances to him and the Umbrella Man. I don't think he pulled the trigger or was involved in, you know, the big plotting or planning.
Yeah, we're not. Even if he were the Umbrella Man, we don't know what he was signaling and who to. Maybe you do.
No, I think he was, you know, the facts are that Dad was, an operative for the CIA at that time, as far as I can tell. He was running ammunition to the Cuban, anti-Cuban Castro people. You know, and he had, you know, here's what people, you know, I'll tell you what his friends would say, and this is a guy, I think Stephen Huntsman, you know, he said, you know, Dad had the, you know, nobody had the testicular fortitude of him or something like that. You know, he was pretty gutsy, and that's what his father used to always said, if you have some brass, you can get a real far in life. So, you know, you just do things and make things happen, and, you know, a lot of people will stay on the sidelines and, you know, sit back, and, you know, that's the safe route, you know, but he liked to go to take the path of, you know, and that's what he was doing as a young man. He didn't have a lot of family support to guide him in different directions, and I think he got in with a rough crowd in New Orleans. He grew up on the streets. He knew the, you know, mobsters down there. And, you know, I think he wanted to be more than that. And, you know, he probably got in with, you know, some of the people who knew the mob, the CIA guys and the Cubans and anti-Cubans. And, you know, there was a lot of money going on in Cuba back and forth with gambling and alcohol and things like that at that time. And, you know, there's a control games being played on both sides. And I think a lot of people got killed in the Bay of Pigs, you know, CIA people. I really do. I think that's my opinion. And, you know, I think that my dad was connected to the CIA. He was connected to the mob. And, you know, there, you know, his face is on the, you know, possibly on the scene. And there was a Cuban guy sitting next to him. And, you know, a lot of CIA people got killed and they looked stupid in the Bay of Pigs. And, you know, Kennedy was, you know, they pointed the finger at him, kind of. And whether they did it or not, I don't think it was the CIA, like, hey, we kill Kennedy. You know, I think it was some people that were pissed, that were, you know, politically, you know, you can see as politics are in the United States now, how divided they are, you know, to the extreme, you know, in those days, because there wasn't the technology of information to get out there and educate people. So, you know, and that event turned the tide of history. You know, it's similar to 9/11, you know. So I don't know what my dad, you know, he never said, you know, he hated JFK or anything like that. But, you know,
he never talked bad about JFK, and it's inner politics to me. He seemed like he would be, you know, pretty friendly to the JFK. But as you say, he was a young man at that time.
Yeah, he was, you know, to the right on his politics. And, you know, it's easy to get young people, you know, wrapped up in politics and say, this is how things are, this is the answer, and you do this. And he was gutsy, you know, and I don't think, you know, if he was involved in that, that he knew, you know, the top people. I think that he was down at the bottom, and he knew, you know, the next people along the chain that could have got you up to the top. But, you know, I think also that he could have been at the scene, and he also, you know, then went, and he's gutsy enough to go in and work for Garrison, you know, in his office, and know what he, you know, that style of things that my dad would.
And even though he didn't care for Garrison, he liked that idea that he was a double agent with Garrison. He's brought that up to me several times.
He left to Ohio after that. You know, I don't know what happened, but he had some people backing him for sure, you know, to keep him out of trouble on that one, because he was hot. And he got nailed later. You know, he got nailed by, you know, he was put in federal prison and things like that. And, you know, kind of sad stories on some silly things, you know. But, you know, also he's a crazy kind of guy too, you know. And that's, like I said, if you don't sit on the sidelines, that's what happens to you sometimes, you know. So he took his lumps. So with JFK, I think that's just an unfortunate politics getting too extreme, and, you know, and also people being used. And I think a lot of CIA agents got probably killed in you know, the Bay of Pigs. And, you know, I think history shows what it is. I think people have figured it out pretty much now what it's been. But just nobody.
I know when he, you know, worked for Ramsey Clark a little bit as a private investigator there, and the lawsuits, they had to go. They couldn't go criminally because the judge down in Waco was the one that ordered the whole incident happening. So, and they ended up having to be in that courthouse. He and Ramsey Clark go back quite a ways.
Yeah, I've known. Yeah, Ramsey was his. Basically, Ramsey knew about, you know, that he was his father was on the Supreme Court, Tom Clark, and you know, Ramsey ended up becoming also the Attorney General. So, very, you know, and Ramsey's a general, sweet guy. He loved my dad, you know, and I think everybody knows Ramsey's personality, you know, other than, you know, political people don't like him probably, but if anybody who met him probably likes him. So my dad worked Waco, and, you know, my dad took off away from our family a little bit to do that, and, you know, I always kind of regretted that he did that, but at the same time, he made very valuable connections that, you know, that are invaluable today, and I don't regret it at all, you know. But, you know, when you're a kid growing up, you're like, in high school, you're like, Dad, why are you out doing this thing, like this on TV or whatever? And, you know, he's telling us that, you know, these people were murdered, and, you know, he's to the extreme, you know. The Branch Davidians, I don't think, were real sweet, nice, great people, you know, that were neighborly and things like that. They were it to themselves, and they were kind of strange, but, you know, that's part of freedom, too. You know, you got to deal with your neighbors and let them, you know, have their long hair or whatever they're smoking next door, or you drink your thing or whatever. You know, freedom is freedom. It's not my freedom, and you don't get to do your thing. You know, it's just everybody gets to do their thing. Don't hurt me. pretty much, you know. So Ramsey's a guy. Ramsey believes in, you know, freedom and, you know, legal things. He's seen the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, and Ramsey's become, you know, kind of a walking saint is what everybody kind of says about him. And, you know, Ramsey will pick up our phone calls, and my dad spoke to him, and my dad used Ramsey's name a lot when it shouldn't have been used, and same as with Ron Pandolfi and everybody's name my dad would throw out there like he owned it, you know. But, yeah. You know, they knew that, and they were able to deal with that, you know, and they accepted that even though they probably didn't like it, you know, and they weren't involved in all his things every second of the time, and they weren't on, you know, this or that. But, you know, they knew him. They loved him. They were definitely connected to him. He worked for Ramsey.
Did he ever convince you about UFOs one way or the other?
Sure. UFOs are, I think, obvious to people that aren't, you know, kind of opiated their mind on some other, you know, philosophy is what I would call it, not really religion. You know, UFOs, you look to the stars and you can see, you know, we're not sitting here alone. If the sky was black, you could make the argument there was no UFOs, but there's twinkles in the star, you know, and you can see that. And, you know, it's also, you know, if you believe the story about UFOs that, you know, that you can travel to other places, you know, and it plays with time. You know, there's definitely, I think, you know, Einstein and all the physicists, and they all back that up. You know, it plays with time. And the question is do you want to play with time? For example, you see a football game that you already know the score. How boring is that? You know, or you know, something you already know right. That it's not fun to watch. So I think that
you could clean up in Vegas in the sports books. And the stock market as well, and a few other things. Sir, is it something we're talking to Sir Novell here, the son of Gordon Novell? Is there something before we wrap this up that you'd like to get out to the audience? I've pretty well dominated the questions here.
No, it was a little bit mushy in the beginning, and I apologize for that, but I think people can understand that.
Well, I didn't know if I was going to make it through the monologue, even. So we're not alone.
No, it's good to cry. It's definitely good to cry. It gets I think it washes something away. It's symbolic and things like that. And, you know, you go through some tissues. It's good for the economy and things like that as well. So, yeah. The thing about my dad, you know, I would apologize to all the people he brushed, the wrong way. He was like that, and his personality wasn't soft. And I would apologize to all the people, but, you know, people loved him too. And they, you know, he'll be probably one of those people that are understood better, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, or maybe even 200 or whatever. But, you know, he's one of those people. He got his profiles up on Wikipedia, and he's on the internet, and he has some nice litigation, you know, pending to you know, a very big mystery. You know, he was kind of like the robber baron of conspiracy. You know, he loved conspiracies. If, you know, if his socks were missing, the CIA stole them, or the FBI, and. But at the same time, there was a lot of that stuff going on with him, you know. So there was a lot of, I'll tell you the same thing with his father is, you know, nobody knew what he did at the end with who or whether he's telling the truth about this or that. There's a bunch of stories about his dad, you know, Billy Rose, Manhattan Primitive, The Nine Lives of Billy Rose, and some other books about Billy Rose. But if you know dad and you know his story, you pick up those books, and it's about reading the same character over again, but, you know, on a different level. Billy Rose, you know, was a cold heart, you know, kind of a cold-hearted person, and my dad had a warm heart, you know, and he had kids, you know, and, you know, he didn't leave.
Your dad, Gordon Novell, could take care of himself, but he was actually a man of, he was a teddy bear in many ways, but he could certainly defend himself if he had to.
Why nobody feels sorry for him all the time. Like, you can cry and then you can stop crying because he had that hard side, and you can say, hey, that's why, you know, this has happened to you. Why don't you change this? But, you know, he didn't have a good, you know, social structure growing up and stuff, and he went down the wrong path, but he got back on the right path, and I think that's why he has so many friends like Ramsey and Bob Shaheen and, you know, David Michael and Michael Jackson and those kind of people. And, you know, there's a list of people you can name, Steven Seagal, Larry Flynt, John DeLorean, all those kind of people. But, you know.
Man, that must have been did you meet Steven Seagal yourself?
No, but Dad would, you know, got an autograph.
Yeah, I mean, because you enjoy karate and things like that, if I understand that correctly, from your dad.
Paul's an interesting character. You know, he's got his character flaws too. I think we can see that. But he looks like a pretty good-hearted guy, and you know, he's into MMA now and stuff, and that's a very neat sport and things like that. So, you know, Dad, he had a problem, same as Michael Jackson. He had some mobsters and things. And Steven Seagal, you know, he's a tough guy, you know, no doubt about it. But he, you know, when it comes to banging bullets and things like that and black ops, you know, I think, you know, Steven Seagal was a normal person too, and he didn't have those kind of wires, and he was out looking for those kind of wires. And, you know, he found my dad, and he and my dad did some business, and he definitely gave me an autographed photo of Steven Seagal, which I still have. And, you know, I see Steven Seagal in it, you know, fight. So it's interesting. You know, he had a lot of interesting friends I met, you know, Larry Flint and those guys and people, you know, people you wouldn't normally meet. And we traveled to a lot of places with my dad and did interesting things and, you know, heard a lot of good stories over the years and stuff. But, you know, but he also had his flaws too. You know, he wasn't, you know, the everything to everyone. So, but a lot of people loved him. So that's fine.
Yeah. What time is it there in Thailand?
It's about 7 a.m. It's that's what's kind of
new. So we got you up early, huh? We appreciate you coming on.
Appreciate
you. Got any closing thoughts?
Again, I want to say thank you for recording all his videos and things on the web, you guys' website and recordings. We didn't have that in our family. You know, we weren't able to do that stuff for him because, you know, just the emotional baggage we had with him. But we all loved him and things. And we thank you guys for recording his thoughts and things because a lot of people might want to listen to those in the future. And even if they don't, you know, you still made him feel very good about himself. And you guys are quite nice people. And I appreciate you, you know, letting me come on here as well and putting these things on the Internet. Internet will be here for a long time, I hope.
Yeah, it'll be there for a long time, I'm sure. Thanks very much, Sir Novell. We'll be in contact with you.
Sure.
And we hope that Gordon's pursuit of free energy and low-priced energy from the UFOs, I hope that continues, that sort of research.
Yeah, there's I think there's a group of people. Dad was a little bit of a wild guy, and you know, if he had that technology and had $100 million in the bank to back it up, it could have been dangerous. Who knows? You know, and you know, they say you can control time, and time's already set, and things like that. And, you know, but you know, if that's the truth, then that's the truth. And you know, there's more responsible people on the planet than Dad to have that. You know, but he knew the ideas, and he wanted to make it free, which is, you know, kind of what our idea of our country is, and, you know, what we all kind of believe in. He wanted it to be free, and he didn't believe people should have to, you know, slave around for, you know, gas and things like that. And you look at it objectively, and it's true. You know, we shouldn't have to, you know, do all that stuff. But also, it's reality. You know, we have to move from place to place. We have to eat. You know, people are always going to have to work on this planet to, you know, somebody's always – until we get very sophisticated, almost magical, you know, people are going to have to work. And, you know, maybe that's what we're here for a little bit, is, you know, just to relax. And, you know, everybody isn't dealt a fair hand on this planet, that's for sure. And, you know, I think that's what he was trying to do, is get everybody dealt a fair hand, you know, so that, you know, if you wanted to do this or that, or if you wanted to get off this planet, you could get out of here, you know. So, you know, that's his idea, you know. And he left behind a lot of plans and CDs and writings and stuff about that. And you know, I don't think there's anybody out to steal that from him and this or that. You know, it could be like a nuclear weapon. It's dangerous. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it'll come out, you know. And, you know, it just takes a little while. And a lot of times, you know, the technology doesn't come out until it's under control and we understand it. It's like you don't release something on society, you know, that could potentially destroy everybody, you know, until you got a pretty good grasp of it. It's just not responsible. And, you know, that's kind of the thing. But also, it's not responsible to pollute the planet and things like that. But it's a big planet. There's a lot of water and plants and things here, and we don't understand it either. So he didn't understand everything, but he had I think a lot of people knew that he knew more than the rest. you know,
yeah.
There's a lot of people like Sir Fatty and things like that, you know, and how put off people like real scientists, Kirk Hawkins or that, those kind of people. And they know a lot. I met those people and those are real scientists. My dad was an investigator and he brought them, you know, information, you know, that they could use for their own pursuits. And they did the same for him. And they, you know, it's like the internet. They're all trading information. I don't think any one of them's got it built yet, you know, except maybe, you know, the people out in the desert or whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff out in the air. That's for sure. And, you know, our military keeps things secret, but that there's reasons for that. Everybody thinks it's dark and evil, you know, but a lot of times a lot of people are good. You know, there's a lot of people that are good on the planet, more than so than bad. Otherwise, we'd all be killing each other. And a lot of people, and when the time is right, those kind of things will come out. And, you know, you want to make sure that everybody gets to live their life too, you know, and have their freedoms down here as well, even though it's not perfect. So we'll see what happens is what I would tell you.
Okay, we're going to have to move on. Life moves on. Gordon Norvell, I think this entire hour has been very educational about him. He's been an interesting person, an interesting man, and I appreciate you coming on, sir, talking about your father.
I appreciate you letting me come on and talk.
Thank you very much. This is Jerry Pippin. This has been a salute to Gordon Norvell, 1938 to 2012. Thank you.